Hey folks, Zach Gossman here, Insider Indianapolis Star. This is Mind Your Banners for March 19th, 2024. The first Mind Your Banners of the men's basketball offseason. We'll talk a little men's basketball, a little women's basketball, maybe a little bit of my son's Pokemon card collection here. With me, as always, is Mike Nieslick from the Bloomington Herald Times. We have returned from the True North. I guess maybe Canada would object to calling Minneapolis the True North, but you were there long enough that you can call it pretty much whatever you like, Mike. The women, obviously, kind of a weird and disappointing showing in the Big Ten tournament. The men win a game, lose a game, probably about what we expected. We'll start on the men's side because we do just kind of need to put a bow on that season. I don't know. You said something interesting in Minneapolis, and it was when, I guess, debate was sort of bouncing around over whether Michigan would move on from Juwan Howard. You said that it felt like Indiana fans felt like they had the season that Michigan actually had. And I am not here to tell anybody how they should feel about, what ultimately was a, I think it's fair to say, a disappointing season in Bloomington. But there wasn't anything particularly dramatic to me, other than maybe Mike Woodson's double technical ejection, about Indiana's, sort of brief foray through the Big Ten tournament. It was just kind of a team. It was the team that we've seen all year, winning a game that was played on terms they could manage and losing a game that was played on terms they couldn't. And that was, just kind of it.
Well, Nebraska was really good against Indiana this year. That was my other takeaway. They were, if you just went by those games, they were the best team in the country. Unfortunately, they had to play a few more games. They did make the tournament though. So, yeah, I mean, it's just a deficient roster, I felt like, is what ultimately it came down to. Mike Woodson put a lot on Xavier being out, that prevented them from maybe clicking as early as it did. Does that get them to the tournament? I don't know. Ultimately, what, maybe 3 wins away, would you think would have done it in terms of the regular season? But
I
they would have
mean,
needed more quality wins. Like, could they have beaten? They would have not. They Xavier wasn't gonna get them over the hump against a Purdue.
yeah, I think the problem you have is like if it had been Kansas, which was a game that he did not play in, and it had been maybe Illinois, which is a game he did play in, but Kalel Ware didn't play in. I think they would have been on the bubble. I'm not convinced they would have been in because, and we talked about this so much, like the and this I
The
guess is a
efficiency and
nice,
all that.
yeah, I guess this is a nice segue into more about the off season. Indiana's problem really wasn't wins and losses nearly so much. They had some problems, but they only beat two tournament teams all year. But it was efficiency numbers. It was that the computers did not like their profile, despite the fact that they challenged themselves in the non-conference and played in a decent, high major conference, because they didn't score the ball well, they didn't defend well, and as a result, their losses, tended to be uglier than their wins tended to be impressive. And so I don't know that like 1 or 2 wins really gets this team in, maybe closer to the bubble. And maybe if it is the right 2 wins, sure, but
I'm just not saying. Like, to me, Mike Woodson, it felt like Mike Woodson thought injuries were what predominantly kept this team short. And I don't think, and I agree with you, whereas like I think it was more that the roster was deficient in certain ways that prevented them from being a tournament team and being.
I think that's fair. And I mean, yeah, it and injuries maybe like in the way that all this stuff like long tail, kind of mixes with everything else, like yes, maybe the Indiana of like February 27th on shows up on January 27th if there are no injuries. And you always have to presume there will be some injuries, but if Indiana becomes the kind of team that maybe not only beats Illinois, but holds on to win the Penn State home game, beats Nebraska at home, maybe beats Penn State away. Well, then that's not a ton of not Nebraska, Northwestern. Then that's not like a ton of overwhelming quality, but that probably improves their computer numbers a lot, you know. And then suddenly you're talking about a team that's, you know, maybe got 13 or 14 Big Ten wins instead of 10. So I mean, it's you know, this stuff always goes back and forth. But I agree with you that like it really what undid Indiana was Indiana's profile as a team, not just that Indiana wasn't healthy.
Yeah, and they could have used that open scholarship on a guard that might have made it so Xavier, the impact of losing Xavier Johnson wasn't so great, because obviously the guard play I think was where they were sort of it was most stark in terms of what they needed and what they had. The outside shooting was terrible. They didn't have depth. Gabe Cupps was out of his depth, I think, in term when they got to the Big Ten Conference, he just wasn't good enough offensively and enough of a threat. Teams were like just, and that's why I think he had to go to the bench a little bit more as the season went on. During that 5-game win streak, because teams were just able to just add extra defenders to in the paint. Just really double down, and so everything kind of got thrown off because of that. And as you say, kind of looking at the off season, that's kind of where you start. I mean, obviously, we don't know where everything's going to shake out, but they need guards and they need shooting, to me.
No, I think if, I mean if you do want to just kind of spin forward, because I imagine that's what's on everybody's mind. The portal's been open, you know, formally open for you know, a day and a half, 2 days, however you want to see it now. I'm guessing a lot of people would rather think about that than, you know, rehash.
Let's rehash every, what was it, is it, what's it, how do you say his name? Topanga? Shot.
Who?
The Nebraska kid.
Tominaga? You said, did you say
Tominaga.
Topanga?
Topanga,
Like Boy Meets
Topanga.
World?
Yes.
That's
Topanga was every one of his three, his every one of his celebrations
let's
and every
move
one of
on.
his 3-point.
Moving on. Moving on now.
Some people listen to you on the podcast.
I think Indiana, I mean, I put some together, I think might be up tomorrow. And it was just kind of talking about like, you know, portal needs or, you know, roster questions that ultimately will inform portal needs, basically. And I came up with five things. One, obviously replacing Khalil Ware, presuming he goes to the NBA. Two, Indiana just has to get shooting. Like it's past time to just sort of say like, we need to have guys on this. You know, we're not you and me, but we as if we're speaking as Indiana, need to have guys on this roster that can shoot. Three, scoring punch in the backcourt. And I think the thing is like, two and three obviously can go together in the sense that I don't necessarily think you need sharpshooters. Like I think in a way it would almost just be better if you could find guys that, you know, could average maybe 10 points, 11 points a game for you while making 36% of their threes. Like I sort of used Auburn as like a team comparison where something like five of Auburn's top seven scorers are guards. Almost every one of them shoots at least 35%. Nobody is insane in terms of their backcourt 3-point shooting. But on any given night, any one of them can hit three or four threes. And so it's the overall sort of like it's the aggregate threat that makes Auburn a tough team to defend. I said ball handling help because I think it might be difficult to just say like we want an out and out point guard if you are bringing back Trey Galloway and Gabe Cupps. But like if you go get a low mid, let me be a low mid-major scorer. That player will probably have. I'm thinking. I used the Lance Jones comparison at Purdue. That player will probably have some ball handling ability in their background already, because at the lower levels, you know, scoring guards just tend to have the ball in their hands a lot because they tend to be a focal point of the offense. And then the fifth thing I said, and we can debate this or not, is I said you kind of need to figure out what you're doing with Malik Reneau and sort of is he a four long term? Is he a five long term? How do you want to develop him, particularly the defensive end? Because that informs, you know, kind of what you need around him. So those are kind of the things that I guess I came up with. I don't know if you had any thoughts, but.
Well, I'm curious. So what do you think in terms of like, is it, are you hoping to get another Mackenzie Mbako type high schooler? I mean, are you just all in on the portal?
I don't think you can
And
assume a guy like that's going to be out there. I think you have to go all in on the portal. And if an opportunity like that arises, then, you know, examine it. But. You
Are you
can't.
getting are you trying to find guys with more than 1 year of eligibility, or are you just straight kind of whatever, you know, graduate transfer? Like it just to me, this, you know,
It would be
how.
ideal to get more than 1 year to me out of guys, but if there's a guy that fits, you know, I mean, because like, the thing is, like you say, like, oh, guys with more than 1 year of eligibility. Well, Indiana's best transfer last year had 3 years of eligibility remaining, but he's only going to use one of them. So, like, it's, I think you, I mean, you want some roster continuity, and this is where I think, you know, the argument is basically Indiana needs to be more level and invested at the high school ranks than it ultimately wound up being, not for lack of trying, but then it ultimately wound up being in 2024. But you know, there's also an element in the portal of it's just kind of like, you know, if you can go take guys and say, well, he's only got 1 year of eligibility remaining, but you can also take guys that have several years and ultimately they don't need to use them all because they develop so well. I just think you got to find fits and make it, you know, work after that.
How quickly are fans going to be patient? Like, what do you think the road ahead is like here for the next couple of weeks?
Yeah, I mean it's difficult. Like I said this somewhere yesterday, I forget where. These first few days in the portal are just like so much white noise. Like there are just
I
they're just
love that the players that go in get contacted in the list of contacts, like 36 teams, and it's like,
yeah, I
nasty.
mean it's just like it's this
Yeah.
huge tonnage of guys that go into the portal and then basically, there is that initial sort of round of contact. I compared it to like I don't know if sorority recruitment works this way in Indiana anymore, but when I was in school, I was in a fraternity house, so I was sort of tangentially familiar with this process.
Say you were recruited by many sororities.
I was. There were 19 sororities on campus at the time. They had something called 19 Party, where over the course of like a long weekend, anyone interested in joining a sorority went and visited literally every single sorority and sat with them for like 30 minutes, 20 minutes, something like that. And like you're talking thousands of what the sorority's called potential new members coming through. Then everybody kind of
What
broke
else
into,
would they have called them?
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, they could have called them anything. Rushies, I don't know. Anyway, the point is everyone kind of broke to their corners for a few weeks around Christmas. And like you know, the women who were interested in joining sororities like ranked the 12
19.
houses that they preferred, and then every house basically chose to either invite back or not invite back, you know, a certain number of
That's a good compare. That is a fair, like,
and like and it went
fair.
from 19 to 12 to I think like 8 to 5 to 3 or something like that. And the point was, you know, you would it was rare you'd get like all 12 or all five or whatever. But by the time you got to like, they called it three party, you were pretty much assured that you were going to get a bid from that house. And then it was about basically sorting through your options and the houses sorting through their options. And that's like kind of, we're at 19 party in the portal. Everybody who can, because a lot of people won't because their teams are playing in the postseason, is flooding in.
Right.
And there is just a massive amount of early contact going on. And there will always be some players that have a decent idea of where they're going because, yes, maybe they've been tampered with, or, you know, just like maybe, you know, in 19 Party, there would be a woman whose sister was already in a house. So she knew that's where I'm going. And
We are
she's,
going deep with
but
this.
it's a good, seriously, it is a good
It
metaphor for all this. The
absolutely
point
is.
is, that's why I say, like, these first few days are just a lot of white noise. Like it is just a lot of like, well, that's interesting. My team could use that player. He averaged 17 and a half points a game. I'd love him. And like, it'll take a little while to establish contact, you know, sort of sort out interest, you know, establish relationships, watch film, you know, player priority lists, you know, team priority lists, and then go from there. I mean, like it. People want it to move fast, and it will to a certain extent, but like we're still probably talking about, I would guess, a couple 3 weeks before like we have a, I mean, for example,
Idea of what direction they're going in.
well, maybe at very least before we have like, for example, like maybe a first commitment. You know what I mean? Like I
Yeah.
think it's still gonna take a little while, but there can always be the odd guy that goes in and, you know, I don't know, he's from Seymour and he grew up an IU fan and IU's interested. He's like, well, if IU's interested, then I'll take the visit. I'll do this. I'll make sure I get a decent NIL number, but that's where I'm going. You know, it's just, I mean, it will move fast in the grand scheme, but when you're a program like Indiana that's got a lot of holes to fill and a restless fan base, it probably won't move fast enough to appease people, so to speak.
Did any name? I mean, we don't have to get too in the weeds, but in terms of like, to me, always getting kind of the guy that has to bump up is always a riskier bet. I mean, because I thought Khalil Ware last year was sort of the perfect transfer, right? A guy with that has talent to be a high-end power four player, and have an impact. That just was kind of disappointing. Any players like that that have jumped in the portal, or any players? Power five players that have jumped in that you think might fit? Because I mean, to me, those are the players that I think Indiana needs in terms of like impact. I don't think they could just rely on saying we're going to sign three, guys from lower down and hope that we can, improve them. Because their numbers will be more impressive and things like that. But I just think it's risky at this point. Indiana needs, I feel like for next year, an impact sort of type of player.
I don't think there's any doubt about that. I mean, I think the first thing Indiana's got to do is figure out like who's back. So they know Galloway's back. You need to have a conversation with McKenzie Mbako to understand his intentions because,
Leal,
well, yeah, Anthony Leal's back.
come on, that's two.
Mbako is the sort of player that both positionally and, you know, potentially in terms of like offensive volume, like, you know, there's going to be other guys that Indiana might want to recruit that are going to want to know
If
what
he, if based on
Mbako's
his decision,
role is going to be if they think he's coming back. And then there is like the Malik Renu thing, because like Renu is an incredibly talented player. And he's also a player that is just sort of like, depending upon Indiana's future, a little bit stuck between positions. Like he's struggled at times to guard small ball fours. We've seen him get in foul trouble. People talk about kind of the fouls he commits that are frustrating, they're far away from the basket or they're ticky-tack. And I agree that he can still improve on those. But I think the reason people notice those is because he commits fouls that you don't notice, where you just say, oh, you know, he's trying to defend a guy, the guy got the better of him. The problem is that he commits those fouls and then he picks up the ticky-tack foul. And it's sort of like, well, if he didn't commit the first foul, you wouldn't really remember the second foul because he just finished with two fouls a game. The point is he struggles to defend small ball fours. He, you know, is probably got to continue to kind of bulk up to really be able to defend the five, given that he doesn't have just some, you know, otherworldly length or wingspan or something that like a Khalil Ware would have. It's clear from watching Mike Woodson's first three seasons, he wants that Trayce Jackson-Davis, Khalil Ware sort of volume rebounding, shot blocking, rim protecting presence defensively. Renu is adding a face-up game. It's got to continue to come along. My point is, if you're gonna if Renu if Malik Renu is gonna come back in his current sort of state as a player, you kind of have to play another big next to him because he's probably not the rebounder or the shot blocker at this point in his career that you need at the center of Mike Woodson's defense. But if you do that, then you're committing to another, you know, another year of too big basketball. And so I think you kind of have to figure out, and obviously these are things that if they haven't happened already, will be happening right now. So we're talking about this stuff like Mike Woodson and his staff aren't working on it, but they probably are. They're just not
Oh,
sharing
they
it.
probably had all these. No.
But like the point is, you got to figure out, you know, where McKenzie Mbako is and what his role is next year, and you got to figure out what you're doing with Malik Renu. Because, for example, if you did bring both those guys back, then basically I would just say you need to add a lot of shooting and a rim protecting presence, and just sort of, you know, believe that you can continue to play too big, but that Mbako's 3-point shot will continue to come along. That Renu will continue to sort of add, maybe not at volume, but like he'll be a 33, 34% 3-point shooter and he'll take a couple a game. That, you know, Trey Galloway is an effective point guard, and that basically you're just going to flood the zone around him with a bunch of guys that can shoot. But for example, if you are going to stray away from the too big, whether it's because, and I'm not predicting this, anybody, as we've said many times in this portal era, you have to assume everybody might transfer. If there's a world where Malik Reneau seeks passers away from Indiana and you want to maybe do something more like move Mackenzie Ngakoue to the four, then that's where I would argue that you need A, more ball handling help, and B, maybe guards that can shoot, but as a function of their scoring, I'm thinking about, using like a recent Indiana comparison, like a Devontae Green, Al Durham, Rob Johnson type of player, rather than guards who are basically, going to be used almost exclusively spotted up offensively, thinking about a Nick Zeisloft or a Miller Kopp, somebody that is there offensively for the defined purpose of shooting threes a lot of the time. Does that make
All right.
sense?
It makes total sense. I got a question for you. So if we've talked a little bit about this and you say Khalil Ware cannot pass up the draft, or you think that because of the lack of talent that he'll be sort of the advice will be, so, you could have a better chance of vaulting up and securing a spot, especially in a weaker draft. The Athletic's latest mock draft came up. They have Ware going 33, so the second round. Do you think, so we talked about, and you've written about quite a bit about Indiana's war chest, that it would make more sense if you're Indiana to try to convince Ware and build and spend that money on him, whatever it costs, to come back than to have to seek out portal. I mean, they'll have to get portal additions, but you'd might need, if if Mbako and Ware come back specifically, you need much more complementary pieces as opposed to reduce or a significant rebuild. Do you think that's smarter use of your money if you're Indiana and if he's willing to listen?
I mean, if he's willing to listen, if like just on the
Just don't
absolute,
you, I mean, because like on the team's
on
face,
the absolute,
if
like,
Ware and Mbako are back next year with Galloway, regardless of what they do, I think this team might even be preseason top 25, because I think Mbako and Ware elevated their game enough at the end of the season to have those two pieces to build around would be a very strong foundation.
I think if Ware was willing to listen, if he was seriously willing to consider it, then I absolutely agree with you insofar as that is like point guard, wing, big, all three players have, all Big Ten caliber talent, yada, yada, yada. The problem is like, I'm scrolling, I just Googled NBA mock draft. The Ringer, which is a pretty respectable NBA outlet, updated its mock draft yesterday. Kevin O'Connor has Khalil Ware going 15th overall to the Heat.
Quite the disparity there. I think ESPN's last one, they had him 20 some 23 or 25.
Jonathan Wasserman, who my impression anyway has always been does a pretty decent job taking the temperature of the league, did, it looks like he works for Bleacher Report, but he did NBA.com's most recent mock draft, or this is about 4 days ago. He has Khalil Ware going 11th to Oklahoma City. I
Wow.
think if Ware gets into the pre-draft process at all, my suspicion is because of his talent, because of the dominant streak. Like, I think there's a world where, like, a month ago, this was maybe still sort of like within the realm of possibility. I think the problem is Ware had that dominant streak at the end of the season. I don't think he would be in the draft process long before he found somebody, probably
That said,
somebody's, that said, we've got a top 20 pick, and if you're still there, we guarantee you we're going to take you. And obviously that stuff can always move and shake, and oh, somebody else fell, so this team doesn't take you. But I think I personally, and let me say this too, I have not myself taken the temperature of the NBA people. I tend to sort of trust and survey in the spring when people start declaring and stuff. But like, my impression from 10,000 feet is that there are going to be enough teams that see Khalil Ware as a top 20, at worst, top 25 prospect, that he's virtually guaranteed not to fall out of there. And I just don't see how you can turn that down. I think that, I understand NIL, and yes, I do believe, based on what I have heard, that Indiana would have the capacity to make Kalel Ware, you know, an offer approaching, if not surpassing, $1 million. But like, if we're talking about the NBA draft, number one, he'd still be making more than that if he's a first round pick, if I'm not mistaken. I think.
Well, I'm just looking at the rookie salary. If you say 20 to 30, it's 2.6 for the 20th pick and about 2 million for the bottom, the last
and
pick.
Then, and then the other thing you have is.
And you get 3 year guaranteed.
And that starts your clock
earlier.
Toward your second contract, which is where you start making the real money. I just don't see a world where it happens. And if Indiana could make that work, then yeah, fantastic. But I just don't see how it's possible. And again, I mean, I've said this before, like I wrote this in that piece that again, I think it's gonna be out tomorrow. You know, that should probably be the easiest sales pitch Mike Woodson has in the portal cycle. Is finding a replacement for Kalel Ware, because
able
to look at the last two and say, look what I did for Trayce Jackson-Davis. He was a good college player that I turned into, you know, potentially the Golden State Warriors 5 of the future. We'll see. And Kalel Ware came from Oregon in massive need of like reputation rehabilitation, and now he's going to be a first round pick. So why would you not?
Because I wasn't here last year. You know, Trayce fell far, right? Like, I mean, is that a cautionary tale?
No, there were some teams that had him late first round, early second round. Basically, the thing is, he got into the second round, and truthfully, from what I heard, Golden State targeted him, and they basically got to a point in the second round where they said, like, we want Trayce Jackson-Davis. What pick do we need to do it? And they had him targeted before they even took the 57th pick. And I know Trayce or traded for it. And I know Trayce said, you know, people regret this and all that. But I, you know, once you get in the second round of the draft, you know, stuff becomes a lot less about like, oh, we're just going to take this player because we love
him. He was more of a borderline first than.
Yeah. And it becomes more like we have a need, you know, or we project this guy. We're going to take somebody to draft and stash because we don't have room on our roster. Like, I think if I'm remembering rightly, forgive me if I'm getting the details wrong on this. I don't have it right in front of me. If I'm remembering rightly, you know, the Pacers had a lot of interest, but basically knew that they weren't going to have immediate room on their roster. And Trayce had kind of let it get out through his agent that he wasn't super interested in two-way contract. And I mean, like, he went to the Warriors, who the night of the draft announced that a guy that they drafted 57th overall was going to go on a 3-year guaranteed deal. So like, okay, he got drafted 57th,
but he got
drafted 57th by a team that put him on the roster right away and gave him the money and the security that most guys, even sometimes guys picked late in the first, I mean, in the first round, your contracts are guaranteed, but in terms of NBA opportunity, in terms of your, you know, your spot on the roster, your role, I mean, there are times where you see even those first-round guys bouncing back and forth, you know, between the G League for a couple of years. And he's done some time in Santa Cruz, but it's been clear that he was part of the Warriors' NBA plan from day one. So it's – and you know, now you have a Kalel Ware situation where he's probably an even better selling point. You know, he was a top-10 recruit. He was, you know, projected one-and-done player. He went to Oregon. It did not work. He came to Indiana, and basically all his wrongs got righted almost immediately.
Yeah, I mean, because to me, it's like, would it is a year to say he'd be a guaranteed top pick if he came back another year, a top 5 pick, worth him making a little less and not having that clock start? I don't know. I mean, it's an interesting discussion because I think that, you know, in terms of NIL resources, I mean, if you're looking for something that you could get a return for and is less risk, I think throwing money at him as much as you can versus other players that, you know, you're obviously not sure of how they'll fit. Because it just seems to me a quicker path to success.
Possibly. I mean, I get where you're coming from. I just think that
it's like it's impossible, you know, that might be done.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he's going to get a good enough opportunity to just say, like, you know, now's the time. Let's not risk an injury or something like that.
Right, that's the concern, obviously.
Because the other thing I say at this time of year, to all fans who say, like, oh, is he ready? Does he need more development? It's like NBA teams don't think that you stop developing the minute you leave college. Like, a lot of NBA teams would rather you keep developing with them in their system, under their plan, with their staff and their strength coaches and all that different kind of stuff. So, yeah. I mean, I don't know. Is there like anything we haven't talked about portal wise that you think Indiana like is there a profile of a player that in you it makes sense to you for Indiana?
No, I mean, because it, like you said, it depends on who goes and who stays, right? Like, I mean, we all say they need more depth. I mean, numbers wise, like they're in a tough spot because they have to, whatever they lose, now from now till the end of the portal window, I mean, you're already down three scholarship players. They just have a lot of work to sort of catch up, and it feels like it's going to be hard to not be perpetually behind the eight ball unless they get a little lucky here. And they did get really lucky last year in terms of adding McKenzie Mbako late in the cycle. Like I asked you, with trying to get a high school kid. I know Michigan lost their one of their recruits after the coach. There's some more coaching cycle decommits or guys letting out of their letter of intents. I just think that it's going to be hard to sort of get this roster where it needs to be, just because numbers wise alone, if they lose, like we've kind of been speculating, 33%, another player or two at least, where and maybe another transfer to six. Like, that's just a lot to do in one season for basketball without any signees or verbal commits. Cause like, that's why they're so behind. They had nothing in the cupboard. It's bare right now in terms of that class.
Let's talk for just a few minutes about the women's tournament, women's sort of field before we go. Indiana does host. I think everyone still felt, even, especially given some results elsewhere on conference tournament weekend, that Indiana would get a top four seed. This will be what, the third time they've hosted, if I'm not mistaken. Or at least the third time they finished as a top four seed, or entered the field, I guess I should say, as a top four seed. They get a fascinating draw first round, Fairfield. What, 31-1?
Yes.
A team that's won a lot of games and really not beaten anybody. And so I find this matchup to open. I saw all range of sort of reactions, like, oh, Indiana got screwed. Fairfield is way better than that. That's such a tough early draw. Then I saw a lot of people point out, well, but Fairfield has really no quality wins at all. Might not have even made the tournament if they hadn't won their conference tournament, despite their record. It is a fascinating sort of first round matchup for Terry Moran and her staff to have to get their arms around.
Yeah, and this team's kind of we talked, they limped through the Big Ten tournament. Mackenzie Holmes, obviously, she's back at practice. She sounds like she said she feels a lot better than she did last year at this time, which is a good sign, and she's full go at practice. So that's kind of a important step. Sydney Parrish was also dealing with injury, Leigh Meister. So I mean, they had some pieces that were injured. That kind of throws a wrinkle into it. But if they're healthy, I think they should be fine. But this is a tough draw. I mean, Oklahoma beat Texas twice, won the Big 12 regular season. And then obviously, if they didn't make it past that, South Carolina is looming. And that's just a brutal sort of number one overall seed, has lost, the only undefeated team in the country. Just to and has the depth and size to sort of match up with Indiana. So doesn't get any easier, but Fairfield probably the least of their problems if you look ahead in the bracket.
What I would say is, like, number one, I think there would be some good for Indiana just getting out of the weekend after what happened last season and feeling like they're sort of wiping that slate clean. Number two, there is an extent to which Indiana's kind of going to have to turn a page a little bit after this year. Like, Mackenzie Holmes will be gone. It will feel like sort of another sort of recycling of, a generation, in maybe the same way it did when Grace Berger left, certainly the way it felt when Allie Patberg, concluded her eligibility. I think that it would be no bad thing for Indiana to just kind of keep emphasizing the idea that it is one of these programs that competes at the top end of its conference, that's constantly making the second week into the NCAA tournament, that in a sport that, has gained more parity in recent years, but still has an undeniable sort of like upper class, that Indiana remains much closer to that upper class in terms of its results and its profile than what's beneath it. I just think getting through this weekend, like I'm not saying that they should just get through the weekend and then that's it. Be happy with everything else. Don't worry about the rest of the tournament. But getting through this weekend by itself, I think, would make it a successful sort of baseline for Indiana in this tournament, spinning this program forward.
Well, and they've talked a lot about the idea that hosting is a meaningful thing and having this home court advantage. I mean, their attendance numbers were obviously the best they've ever been. Sold out that Iowa game, had the five-digit average for the first time in program history, and so they don't want to waste this opportunity in terms of like when you're hosting, you better kind of make the most of it. Which a lot of these teams, that's what they do, right? They just blow out through the first two rounds and get to the Sweet 16. I think Indiana wants to show that, like you said, that they're at more at that level than not. And losing twice in a row at home to lesser teams, you know, Mackenzie Holmes was obviously not healthy last year, but still, you want to take advantage of kind of that number four seed, which they argued that they deserved.
The last thing I do want to just kind of end on, you talked about it. Mackenzie Holmes has said she feels better. She feels healthier. You know, I think it's not complicated, but I'll give you the floor for kind of the last 45 seconds or so here. It is fair to say Indiana's postseason hinges first and foremost on how healthy Mackenzie Holmes feels and how healthy she stays as she gets back on the floor and obviously plays in these games.
Yeah, and I talked to her dad about it. I mean, I guess the injury goes back to her high school days. Terry Moran talked a little bit about just the kneecap sliding in and out. And essentially, you know, there was no precipitating event. It wasn't like a collision that started it or some sort of injury. It just happens. And so when she landed awkwardly in the season finale, slides out, slides back in, and takes time to just heal and kind of get back in the swing of things. So, you know, you just kind of, there's nothing you could do other than cross your fingers and hope it doesn't happen again. I mean, and that's kind of the scary part for Indiana fans, that every time she's going to go up for a layup or, you know, contest a shot, there is going to be some, you know, nerves, I think, to just, you know, hope she kind of doesn't happen.
We'll leave it there. This has been Mind Your Banners for March 19th, 2024. He's Mike Nislik. I'm Zach Osterman. Thank you so much for listening for the Bloomington Herald Times, for the Indianapolis Star. We will talk to you soon.